Hello and welcome to Queering Eve, a spoiler-free podcast about the TV show Killing Eve, made by some queers. Hi, I'm Nina, and I'm the one with vocal fry.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm very brave to admit it.
Hi, I'm Naya, and I'm the one who is an anarchist in this cast.
Yeah.
Might be relevant later.
We'll it see. Will be relevant. I will be talking about it the whole time.
Great. Can't wait.
Hi, I'm Tamara, and I'm the one who made a burrito yesterday for the first time ever. It was good.
Wow,
and ate it for the first time ever. I did not know what a burrito was.
You until yesterday. Ate a burrito for the first time by like eating your own burrito that you made. Wow.
I think that's a hashtag Tamara experience.
Incredible. So today we're talking about Killing Eve Season 4, Episode 5, called Don't Get Attached. We are over the half-season arc, which is wild to me. This episode was directed by Emily Atef. She's German, so I can pronounce it like that, I think. Or at least born in Germany, and has done some German stuff. So that's what I've got on her. And the writer is Georgia Lester, who wrote some episodes of Skins.
Cool.
Are we ready? Are we emotionally ready to get into this episode?
Let's talk general feelings, huh?
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah. Right.
My general feeling is... I watched this episode on my own without Naya for the first time, and it was so hard not to, like, make sounds and be like, Naya, I gotta see this, because they were in a different room. This episode makes me feel giddy. I thought it was so much fun. It was very enjoyable for me.
I felt that when I first watched the episode. It was just so silly. So out there. I had a blast. And then I think when I rewatched it, it lost some of this charm, delightfulness. Or maybe it's just because I'm really tired today.
Oh, I thought you were going to say because you know how the episode ends.
No, that's fine.
Okay.
So my impressions is also a roller coaster of emotions. But also, this episode is so quotable. My God. Like, we had some quotes in Killing Eve, but really in this episode, they went above and beyond. I have so much stuff written down.
Oh, yeah. I've never had this many notes.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
Where are we, Nina? When are we?
We are in Berlin. 1979.
We're in a squat.
And it's black and white.
It's black and white because that's the only way you can show that it's in the past.
I mean, honestly, very effective because when the screen turned black and white, I mean, when the episode started, I internally screamed because I couldn't do it out loud. And it was because first of all, I could like tell that this was gonna be one of those episodes with a different format, which, as you know, I find very exciting. And then also because it was obviously a flashback, and I am a person who loves flashbacks.
Nice. I was very pleasantly surprised in the first several minutes because I was like, huh, we're in a squat? And this looks like a squat. Like, this looks realistic. And I was like, huh, is this episode gonna do right by leftists?
Yeah. good one.
Yeah, I love that I had that moment. But yeah, I enjoyed this one scene of just a person walking. And there were some signs being made, and I wish I could have read them, but I didn't manage. And then...
Carolyn walks into a room where these anarchists are having a meeting about what they should name their group. And can I just say, I would really like us to imagine what this whole show would look like if the 12 were actually called the Socialist Squad, or Anarchists with Attitude, or the Disruptors, or best yet, Chaos Club.
Chaos Club is the funniest line in this entire episode. I would even argue in the entirety of Killing Eve. I wrote it over half of my page in my notebook where I write Killing Eve notes. It literally says, Chaos Club! Ha ha ha!
Understandable and correct. I just want to... Did I ever make this connection of the 12 being anarchists? It just feels
many,
like...
Many, many times.
Did I? Okay. I was like, this sounds like something that I made up, right? Because of the whole chaos thing. Because I kept making fun of their whole thing being chaos. And then, yeah.
It is.
Saying, well, maybe they're anarchists. And I was right. And it makes complete sense.
So, no, it does not, and we can get to that. First of all, I love that they're having a meeting about what their name should be in a way that's so realistic. Like, anarchists joke about themselves being like, yeah, we had a 6-hour meeting and we decided what word to use in this pamphlet. On the other hand, it's like, yeah, you know how anarchists and leftists always have these exclusive groups that they, like, name a thing and, yeah.
What I found funny in this scene is that they all speak in English.
Mm-hmm, of course.
Why?
Because this guy, Johan, is from Iceland, you know?
yeah, natürlich.
Okay, so, can I just say?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They don't even know if they're socialists or anarchists. Mm-hmm. What are they? Are they Socialist Squad or Anarchists with Attitude?
It's a good question that I don't have an answer to. So I have a terrible theory that is wrong, but I still have it. So my theory about them and their political leanings is that they are the people... This is what makes the most sense within this episode, that they are the people who think anarchy is trashing things, and that's why they call themselves anarchists.
Yeah. Oh, I agree.
So, I don't even know where to start. Oh my god. Like, okay, Carolyn walks in and is like, okay, you're all so stupid and I'm a genius and we should be called the 12, and everyone's like, yeah, I mean, no one even, of course, says anything.
Before that, though, she says that Beethoven named his best symphony number 3. He did not. What the fuck? That's not... He counted the symphonies that he wrote, and then he wrote 3 over the third one. That's not naming it. Okay, go on.
Yes, it's very, very silly in so many ways that they're called the 12.
And I love it.
Yes. But let's talk about how this means that the 12 were originally anarchists. I just cannot explain how funny that is.
It's so funny.
It's so funny.
Truly, it was a joke before this.
Chef's kiss.
I love it so much. It's like... This episode made me think, oh, suddenly I love plot.
And yeah, they also, of course, believe that anarchy means chaos, which I tried to, like, Google it to see like how to explain why this isn't true. And like if you Google anarchy, chaos, literally like one of the first things that comes up is TV tropes. Anarchy is chaos. I don't think our listeners need me to go into what anarchy is and why it's not chaos, right?
No, they can Google it if they want
good,
more info.
Good.
Yeah. Still, I think it's perfect.
Yeah, absolutely perfect.
Right now, I have a good quote to quote, which is Carolyn says, God, you're sexy when I'm right.
Which beautiful. Also is such an anarchist thing to say. And then her boyfriend and her make out and everyone watches in silence. Okay, so what the big reveal is supposed to be that we haven't touched on is that Carolyn was there when the 12 were created.
Not only that, she named them.
Yes.
She was the part of the 12. But I feel like we definitely theorized on that being the case at least twice. Like, I'm almost certain.
At least twice, yeah.
I definitely was not surprised.
Yeah.
So then we get a black and white Killing Eve title card. And then we see Constantine. I wrote, and then we can recognize Constantine instantly, but I guess not.
I did not at this point, no.
Nope, I did not get it.
Okay.
Let's just point out that his name is Carol, and he is dating Carolina.
Mm-hmm. And Carolyn is using the name Janice.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and is dating Johan, who is also Lars.
Anyway, at this point, I thought that they were like cool polyam people.
Yep. I was like, oh, they all have open relationships. That's cool. That's nice.
That's anarchist.
Yeah.
They were like, at least we know about relationship anarchy.
Also, what's happening is that Oliver Schubert is taking a photo of Johan. And Johan gets really mad because this is a meeting. They're literally sitting there gossiping about who they find attractive, but it's a meeting.
Yep. And also a cool thing to do when you're living with people in squats is to trash their cameras.
Yeah, so in other words, this scene can be described as, we find Johan sucks.
Yeah.
Shocking.
So then we cut to Carolyn and Constantine making out.
Carol
and
Janice
and Carol making out.
Yeah.
Exactly. Oh no, my notes literally say, sorry, I mean Carol. Just apologizing to myself in my notes. And then they are like, where should we bang? And they're like, not at my place, but then they do at Carolyn's place.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And then they're in bed and they're lying down and we get another of those scene cuts to them laughing thingies. And this actor laughs exactly like Constantine.
Yep. Yes.
And at this point I was like, this is Constantine.
I did not notice this on my first watch. I don't know how I missed it, because it's exactly the same, but I genuinely just completely overheard it.
Then we have the title of the episode, which is Don't Get Attached, which is what Carolyn says to Carl. And he says, don't worry, I won't. And she's shocked.
Yep. And then he leaves and he says, tschüss. And the subtitles say, shoes?
No, really?
What? Yeah. I did not see that. Wow.
Yes! Shoes with a question mark.
Oh, I love that.
So, and when Constantine leaves Carolyn's bedroom, he sees another young man leaving a different room, which is the room of Carolyn's father. And at this point, I was like, okay, so we're retconning that implication that he's a pedophile, I guess. But then I also went back to see what Carolyn actually says in that scene. And I will read it out just a second. So the scene is with Carolyn and Eve, and they are in a park where there is a kid's playground. So this is where Carolyn decided to say this line. And she says, "My father used to come to this park all the time, to the men's bath ponds just over there. Very popular in the 50s with spies. Ideal place for a sensitive conversation. And to have sex with boys, of course, which would have been an added bonus for daddy." So, like, at that point, I was like, this is definitely leading us into believing that he was a pedophile because of this setting and because of the word boys, obviously.
Yeah.
But now that this season decided that this isn't so, that he, I guess, was just having a lot of sex with young men, I see that it can be read a different way. Because one, I don't think children go into these bathing ponds. Like, I'm pretty sure this is an adult thing. And two, I guess people do use the word boys for just like younger men sometimes. So, yeah.
Wow, I had that like so imprinted in my mind that, yes, he's gay and he's a pedophile, that I just saw this as, okay, so he's not into kids, but like he's into like teens. And I saw this guy as like really young.
I really don't think he looks...
I do think he was like in his early 20s.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which I'm glad.
Yeah. Me too. Because I was like, so, because then Carolyn and her dad like joke about it. And I was like, Carolyn, you're just okay with that? Again, because I kept on thinking that this is a teen.
So definitely, I will say that definitely, I'm not 100% sure what the implications were in second season when where Carolyn says this, but I'm like 100% this season just decided that it just means like younger guys and not children or teenagers. Yeah.
And I do want to say I'm still uncomfortable with the age difference and there's still a huge power imbalance. But yeah, better than children. Yes.
So yes, when the two lover boys leave, Carolyn and her dad have a little bit of whiskey and a little bit of a talk. And her dad basically implies that she now started working for MI6, if I understand that correctly, and she is about to go on her first job.
Or that she is already doing her first job.
As a secret agent.
And he is also working for MI6?
Yes.
Okay.
They are on a mission to get... No, I don't... Honestly, I don't know what exactly is happening. I feel like she is there to infiltrate the 12 that is not the 12 yet. Do you think that? Or is she just like an anarchist apart from her job?
No.
No clue.
Right?
No, she's there to infiltrate something.
She's looking for Soviet spies.
Yeah,
I guess.
It's just a family business. That's why they're both working for MI6.
Exactly.
And then he calls her Carolyn, and this is when I realized that this is definitely Carolyn.
But okay, so from this scene, we then cut to present-day Carolyn.
And we're in Berlin.
Now! So Carolyn is in a car, she's being driven somewhere in Berlin, and she asks the driver to stop the car so that she can stand outside and look longingly at the victory column, is that what it's called?
I just called it the angel, and I'm like, everyone knows what that is.
So that was another short Carolyn scene, which we are used to.
Oh, yeah. I thought we wouldn't get them anymore, but here we are.
And then we go back to Havana, and we get nice colors and food that I want to eat.
And we don't get a title card, because in this episode, and most episodes, the title cards are accompanied by Doom, and it just doesn't fit here, you know, because Cuba is so colorful and nice and there's fun music playing, so
yeah,
none of that. But yeah, Villanelle is eating fruit and bread, and yeah, and Benita made food for like 20 people basically.
Yes.
Now I understand why Villanelle stayed and didn't agree to go with Caroline in the previous episode. Like, when that was happening, I was just like, what? Why? But now I get it. Of course. Come on.
And Villanelle is like, okay, please stop making me food and go home. And Benita starts crying and tells her about the domestic abuse that she is a victim of. And it's sad. And then Villanelle is like, I can help you.
Yeah. And Benita is like, yeah. Cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, she says, I know what you did to the man with the toe in the nose.
Yeah.
Yep.
And she approves.
And she's like, if he deserved that, just assuming that he did, then what does Camilo deserve? And the scary, eerie Killing Eve music starts playing.
Yep.
Yeah.
I like their friendship. It's nice.
Yeah.
Well, I love to see that Villanelle is using her powers for a good cause.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is nice. What is not nice is Eve in Paris at a tennis competition where she creepily looks at Chloe and waves at her.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, she is in Paris to kidnap a child.
Then we move to Margate.
Mm-hmm.
To the restaurant where we've been.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the hotel's restaurant.
Yes, definitely.
Okay. And Constantine has a bag of clothes.
Also an ear infection, and I just want to say that's very relatable.
Having an ear infection?
Yes.
Okay.
Cool. Good to know that.
So Pam wants to know what's next for her training, and I guess it's playing dress up.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't understand why she needs new clothes, as she says, what's wrong with my clothes? And again, another great line is, oh, nothing wrong with your clothes. It's great if you want people to avoid you at a party.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say, I love her clothes. I love how she looks. You all know my type. And I would happily avoid her at a party. But it's because I think she looks intimidating, not because she looks uncool or whatever.
Same on all of that. We are both, what's his name, Derek?
Yes, and the clothes that Constantine thinks that she should be wearing are those that will make people fall in love with her.
Mm-hmm.
And to achieve that, he bought a bag of clothes that Villanelle would wear.
Tamara, would you mind describing the outfit that Pam of course puts on?
The outfit that Pam puts on is a masterpiece. So she's wearing this humongous padded winter jacket that's in the shape of a bell and has a really high turtleneck collar. And then she has the same material pants underneath this, and she drowns in this dress, and it is amazing. And the face that she makes when she points at how she can't, like, deal with this outfit is truly, truly magical.
Yeah, Constantine tells her she looks beautiful. And she tries to look mad, but it's like, you know, when a really puffy cat tries to look mad and just looks cute and funny, that's aww her.
Yep, exactly.
I think she would hate hearing that.
Yes.
Okay, so then we are at Eve's hotel where Yusuf is knocking on her door. So he goes in, he brings her some info on Oliver Schubert. He found out that he is now a classics professor. So he also gives Eve a guide to the Cold War so that she will learn in 2 hours how to be a student with an interest in radical 1970s politics.
Mm-hmm.
She makes some great excuses, I feel like, when when Yusuf is inside. Like, she's very bad at it when he is outside the room, but inside, like, he finds a coloring book, she says it's a mindfulness exercise, he sees a drawing, she says she's drawing her dreams.
And can I just say, this drawing is a person getting hit by a car and there's blood everywhere?
Yeah. Then Eve really wants Yusuf to leave, so she asks him for some boundaries, which he accepts, but he really, really needs to pee first. And in the bathroom, we see Chloe.
Okay, let's go from things being metaphorically on fire to things being pretending to be literally on fire.
Oh no, we have a damsel in distress, and the damsel is Villanelle.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, firefighters are coming, and the only firefighter that can come into the apartment is...
Camilo. Yep, how lucky.
So she hits him and takes his medal or badge, I couldn't really tell, and she suffocates him with the water hose from the fire truck.
Which is pretty good.
It is. I thought that she was gonna burn him because of what she said when she was with Benita, like, doing that to him, what he did to her, whatever.
But kind of, like, Benita said that she often hopes he would choke, and now he kind of choked on the water.
Yeah. No, I think it was great.
And she was very happy.
Yeah.
Yep.
She did, like, a little...
And then she leaves the building and has wet hair, which has happened so many times in this season that it's becoming a theme, and I support it because she looks great.
Yeah.
Yep. Meanwhile, Eve and Yusuf are on a bridge discussing the child abduction. So Yusuf is calculating at what point Elaine realized that her kid is gone and how fast she could come to London about it. And Eve does not seem concerned at all. Yeah.
So Eve and Chloe leave to go on this adventure, which, by the way, this adventure is that Chloe is going with Eve to a class. Amazing.
That's my kind of adventure.
And I love the way Yusuf says bye to them. Mm-hmm. It's like, bye!
Then we have Carolyn on a bench. I feel like we've seen her on a bench many times.
Yeah, it's her thing.
This is one of her hobbies. So Carolyn is sitting on a bench in front of the house where she lived when she was in Berlin in 1979.
Mm-hmm.
And... do you think that this house looks very similar to where she lived in season 2?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, because when I first saw it, I thought that was that house. And then I was like, oh, so I guess they went from Berlin to London. It really confused me. So then while looking at this, we go back to a flashback where young Carolyn brings the anarchists over to get in on her dad's whiskey collection. Okay, so they go and have a party inside, and we see Carolyn talking to Carolina, who is writing a novel that is like Kafka, but better.
What a quote, again, truly. I would tattoo this on my body.
That is a good tattoo.
And Carolyn, of course, is a total bitch to her. And she can tell that Carolina is lying because she is fidgeting with her ring.
Yes.
Then she talks briefly with Konstantin, tells him about Carolina's lying tell with the ring.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, yeah, she always does that when she says something nice to me. Which I thought was pretty funny.
And Carolyn laughs.
Yes. I love good, healthy relationships.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Like this one when Johan joins them and then it's real weird. And then Carolyn decides to get more alcohol. And Johan looks at Karl and is like, shut up. This yep. was fun.
Yep, yep, yep.
So let's stop having fun.
Mm-hmm. Carolyn goes towards the garage and she sees a post-it note on the door saying, Suntorag found out. Don't come in. Meaning she will go in. And she sees her father in a car, dead.
Yes, mm-hmm. there are some photos of him kissing some guy and groping his ass.
The guy that was... The guy from before.
Yeah, yeah, I guess it's the same
That
guy,
I once
yeah.
again described as teen boy in my notes.
Jesus, Nina. Yeah, so Carolyn looks pretty shocked.
Yeah.
She looks shocked, but like she has then like takes on this stoic stance.
Yeah, or like not shocked, but shaken. She looks shaken in her very Carolyn way.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she takes the booze and goes back to the party, which is so very in character and so sad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Carolyn comes back into the living room and smashes the bottle against the wall and says, do you want to trash this place? And they all trash the place.
This scene was so bad.
I don't know. I thought it made so much sense for like this group of people, the way they were presented so far.
Sure. I mean, I'm not saying it necessarily didn't make sense. I just thought it was really funny how they all at the same moment like jumped up and they were like, yeah! And started just like tearing the paintings, and poor Carolina was in the middle of it, like not knowing how to stand.
Well, yeah, you know, anarchists are conditioned to whenever like they see a bottle break to just jump around and start breaking everything else.
This show is really bad at writing like bigger groups of people.
Yeah.
Can I ask, is she already suspicious of Carl here?
Yeah.
Why?
Because he's the only one that's been in her house up until now.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. I just have to be stupid a lot.
So the party's over and we move back to Cuba.
Yeah. Benita is cleaning and Villanelle brings her husband's badge or medal.
Mm-hmm.
And says it looks better on her. And mm-hmm. did either of you also think that they were gonna kiss?
I didn't think they were gonna kiss, but I was like, yeah. And also, I had the thought about like how Villanelle just wants Benita to be happy so much.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, wanna go shopping?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, imagine Villanelle asking someone if they wanna go shopping with her, you know?
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't happen because Benita has friends with abusive husbands of their own.
Mm-hmm.
And Villanelle is like, okay, I will take care of it. But then I have my own Camilo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's still cute that she kind of rolls her eyes when she first sees all of these women there, because she's like, oh God, what did I get myself into? But then she's also like, yeah, that's a good thing. I can help out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is my way of contributing to society.
Yeah.
Yep.
She now found purpose in killing and it's all good.
Yeah.
Back to Carolyn now.
She's in front of a different house.
It's Carolina's house. Carolina opens the door and is like, Janice?
So Carolyn tells Carolina that her name was a lie and also everything else about her was a lie, and if she wants to get a sausage. Imagine this describing currywurst as like, wanna get a sausage. And they go and they sit on a bench yet again. Really, there's
benches.
So many scenes of Carolyn on benches.
Benches are important.
Hmm. And Carolyn finds out that Carolina has 5 children, which is bad?
Yeah, I mean, Carolyn says you must have sacrificed a lot because thinking of how, like, Carolina was planning on being this Kafka but better writer. And Carolina is like, No, I just said that to impress you. You are so intimidating. Also, at this point, she's like, I'm so glad I didn't know your name. That would have been even worse.
Mm-hmm.
Caroline, Karolina. Yeah.
And here's another quote I bet Tamara loved. Karolina says something about just wanting to drop the A. And Caroline's like, a sultan and a sultana are very different.
Yep, I thought it's really funny how this looks like such a burn, but then I googled what a sultana is and it's like grapes.
Yep.
So I'm like, that's not a burn. That's just a fact.
I'm a sultan and you're a grape.
Well, Caroline was trying to offend Karolina, but I personally think grapes are better than rulers. So, yeah.
I bet grapes have killed less people than rulers.
Sultans. Mm.
I think Karolina sees it in that way as well. She's so glad to have seen Caroline so that... Because in her head, I guess she had this incredible image of what Caroline would be doing now. And now she sees the reality and...
Which is what? Caroline has told her zero things about herself.
I think she can just tell that, like, Caroline is really down in the dumps.
Yeah, I guess so.
The plot of it is that Caroline mentions that Johan is alive and Karolina... says that she didn't know, and she hadn't heard from him since that party. And Caroline looks at her hands and is like, nice ring, choose. This time the subtitles translated it as bye. Yeah, but you know, it's...
Here it would make more sense to be shoes. Nice ring, choose.
No, it was... Yeah, she was referring to the fact that Karolina was playing with her ring again, and that meant she was lying.
Oh, I did not get that until now.
Wow. So after Karolina's final jab, Caroline dumps the sausage in the trash and leaves.
Oh, yeah.
That was good, that was good.
Yeah, it's very dramatic.
She's good at dramatic gestures.
Absolutely.
I think a lot of characters on this show are, and I appreciate that.
Like Hélène.
Par exemple.
But let's not get into that quite yet.
Yeah, first we're going back to the amusement park in Margate.
We are in Dreamland!
Once again. And Pam is, again, seen by the dude that is obsessed with her, rightly so. I really didn't think we would see him again.
Yeah, I'm happy with it. And Pam looks at two girls and then she's like, where did they get their clothes? Like, mm-hmm. It's so weird for girls to be wearing clothes then. They must, yeah, I don't know. But of course she was right. And this is Killing Eve. What's the boy's name again?
I forgot.
I think it was Derek, but I don't...
Derek, yeah. So Derek tells Pam that she is like a Hulk, except not green and with a nice face.
And also that he can help her get those outfits because he is responsible with keys.
This is such a first job thing to say. You're like so proud that someone gave you responsibility.
Also, just another great quote, especially out of context, is, can you access the bucket?
Yes.
Yep, perfect. Perfect.
Yeah.
10
Go
out
Pam,
of 10.
I'm asking for help.
Yeah. And when, like, even more, go Pam, is when she comes back and she's changed. He says, you look fierce. And she says, I am fierce.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So she's like... really getting this situation right, but then she pays him. Which, like, Pam, dear, you didn't have to do that.
Yeah. But then she also tells him her name.
Yeah,
and that makes him smile.
Before that, he was hoping to give her a slushie, and he was practicing different possible lines, and one of them were, You seem like a slushy girl to me. Which, have you ever heard anything less true about Pam?
I think the better line was, I just found this on the floor. Oh, God.
What would you love to hear more? Like, which line would work more on you?
The second one.
Okay, so we are going to...
School!
Yes. To a class where the professor is Oliver Schubert, and he is telling us about Cupid.
Yeah, yes. And it's very metaphorical, and I did not care.
Oh, I cared a lot.
Okay, then you can explain it.
Well, I guess it starts with him saying that Cupid can also be seen as malevolent, and that he brings havoc and desire with divine arrows.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm. I didn't catch that because I did not care about this part. And wow.
And then he talks about...
The tale of Cupid and Psyche.
Yes.
Wait. Important things. First of all, Eve puts on glasses.
And her hair up.
Mm-hmm. But also, we've never seen her glasses before and they look good.
Oh, yeah.
You think that's her character or hers?
Hers. They're hers.
Okay.
And then she also doesn't want Chloe to see naked people on the art, so she covers her eyes and yes. Then gives her her phone to play with.
Yeah. Also, there's candy there for, I assume, Chloe.
Yeah. So that's why Chloe has such a good time.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So what does Professor Schubert talk about?
He talks about the tale of Cupid and Psyche, where they are thought of as one of the world's great love stories. But Psyche had to endure beatings, cross rivers, climb cliffs, and journey to the underworld. How far will Psyche go, and who will she have to become to appease her cosmic masters? So that's what we learn in class.
Yes. Can I have just a very short monologue about how much I hate how lectures appear in movies. I understand that in America, in the UK, the way that people lecture is different from my experience, but still the way that it's always done as if this lecture is 3 minutes long and it's so dramatic and has like an arc, like it's a, like they're telling a story every single time and it's just so annoying. I hate it. Like, I understand it from, like, the... It's a storytelling technique, and I'm not saying it's wrong to do it, but just it irks me.
I get that. I think it doesn't bother me that much, because what I hate even more is when that happens, and also then the bell rings, and the professor just stops, and that's it. That's when it ends.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, so this... Class ends, and Eve goes to show him the photos that she found and that he took.
Oh, yeah.
And he tells her who the dude on the photos is, and it is Johan Svensson.
Who was a prick.
Yes.
A prick from Iceland.
And Oliver tells Eve that this guy died, like, 3 weeks after the photo was taken, and... He died in a boat accident, and Eve's like, are you sure he died in an accident and he wasn't murdered? And it's like, I mean, of course she's right, because she's always right, but like, we're probably assuming that he faked his own death, and do you usually do that by getting murdered?
I thought even more so than that, it was like, how is this connected to your thesis?
Yeah, because her thesis is about a unique psychology of the thwarted revolutionary, which is obviously what you are if you die when you're like 20.
Yeah.
And you've been an anarchist for 2 months.
Sorry, Naya, but I don't appreciate you shortening this title.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
It is perfect, and I need it to be said fully on this podcast. Eve's thesis is called Failed Sociopolitical Uprisings in the Soviet-Occupied Territories 1975 to 1989, A Unique Psychology of the Thwarted Revolutionary.
Woof, woof.
Which Oliver comments, good title, long.
He's right.
Yeah.
So the professor then mentions Janice, just like not connected to anything. He just says, huh, there was a Janice. No explanation for why she's important. And then he remembers that he has a Super 8 and he will just give it to Eve.
Yeah.
She really charmed him with that long title.
Oh yeah.
I get it. And in the background, I think even before during the class, but here I think we can see it best, is Rubens's painting Venus and Adonis.
Mm-hmm.
What? Why did you?
It says that.
Oh, okay.
Tamara, do you have any thoughts about that?
No specific thoughts.
Okay, well then. I wasn't one of those kids that was obsessed with Greek and Roman mythology. I feel like, you know, some kids are obsessed with dinosaurs, some kids are obsessed with these mythologies, some kids are obsessed with Egypt, or like ancient Egypt. I think I was ancient Egypt kid.
I think those are like different developmental stages though.
That's true, that's true. Anyway, that's irrelevant. But all this to say is that I googled what's going on in this Rubens painting, and it is about Venus and Adonis, Venus being the goddess of love, so she is the Roman version of Aphrodite, and Adonis, who is her mortal lover, and he dies by being attacked by a wild boar during a hunting trip. And he dies in Venus's arms as she weeps.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God.
Then his blood is mingled with her tears, or in some stories it's like she puts nectar into his blood, whatever, different versions.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes, or he becomes, the anemone flower.
Mm-hmm.
And like, with turning into this flower, this is supposed to be one of the earlier themes of, like, resurrection and what Wikipedia calls the archetypal dying and rising god, which I love this term. And I just want us to maybe keep that in mind for predictions that I will have.
Nina, genuinely thank you for this. it was fascinating.
I saw it and I felt like that could be interesting, and it was.
Yeah, I'm also very, very pleasantly surprised that sometimes it pays off to pay attention and Google things. Truly, I was very convinced that I should just ignore all of this, and you changed my mind.
I mean, I would still like to formally apologize for not at least binging it.
Mm.
But alas.
Yeah. Then Eve and Chloe go back to Eve's hotel room where Hélène is waiting for them. Or, well, Hélène is banging on Eve's door.
Mm. Is she?
I thought she came out of Eve's room.
Oh, I just thought she was pacing up and down in front of Eve's door.
Yeah, I guess that happened. Yeah, that's true.
It's a Rorschach image and we all interpreted it differently.
Yep, no way to figure out what it was.
Yep, it's all in the interpretation.
So yeah, Chloe is happy to see her mom and runs into her embrace, and then Eve has her, haha, I got you look on her face, and Eve and Hélène do their power thingy through the power of the gaze, and
power through the power of the gaze.
Of the gaze, as in G-A-Y-S.
Yes. Yeah, and basically, Chloe really liked her time with Eve.
Why?
Because it was an adventure, I don't know.
Because she got to play on her phone.
And eat candy. And she never gets to do that. That makes sense. None of the writers have ever met a child.
All of the writers are Eve.
Yes.
Yeah.
Are we ready to move on?
Yes.
I'm ready.
Okay, so then we get like these two scenes side by side.
Mm-hmm. Fun.
Yeah, very fun. And it's Carolyn today and Carolyn in 1979 when she is breaking into a place. So in the present, she is breaking into Carolina's house. And in the past, she was breaking into the squat
club. Yeah, yeah, yeah. She's breaking into her own squat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look, whatever.
Old Carolyn, I hated this, but I did refer to her in my notes as old Carolyn and young Carolyn. But old Carolyn looks so happy to be picking a lock again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, in both these scenes, she looks around and then closes her eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And she does a little meditation and then
psychically knows where to look.
Yeah, this is how we find out that Carolyn has superpowers.
Yep.
So after she opens her eyes, she just magically finds the place where whatever she is looking for is hidden.
I unironically love this.
Me too.
Me
I
too.
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It was part of the, like, oh, I love this episode.
Yeah. Because she's just like, yeah, it's a superpower, but it's a superpower of considering all of the places that exist within this room and deciding what's the most likely one to keep a secret.
It's very Sherlocky. It's very...
Yes.
When you eliminate... It's very when you eliminate the impossible, whatever remains, however
Jesus
improbable
Christ,
must be the truth. I'm
Why
so sorry that
quote?
I know this quote. I don't know.
Maybe the spin-off should be Carolyn as Sherlock.
Yeah.
Or Carolyn as a superpower person.
A superhero?
Or just like a witch.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Okay, so in 1979, what she finds is Konstantin's passport, which tells her that he... is from Soviet Russia, meaning he must be working for the KGB, as all Soviets do.
Yeah.
And in the present, she finds a letter saying, Peter, I went to Papa's cabin, back tonight, kisses Carolina.
Thank God Carolina doesn't text.
And leaves messages hidden.
No, her husband's home and he read it and threw it in the trash.
Oh, it was in the trash?
Uh-huh.
Oh, I also didn't get it's the trash.
Okay, well...
After these revelations, let's see another person have a revelation.
And it's Eve, who managed to obtain a projector and is setting it up. And she's watching Oliver's videos. And she sees Johan. And then... she pauses at Carolyn, who, by the way, looks very cool, the way she's, like, saying something.
Mm-hmm.
And Eve walks closer to the image of Carolyn and says, Carolyn.
Yeah. Yeah. And then she stops the tape and does not look further to also see Konstantin.
Oh, also, speaking of her, like, not paying attention, while she's... starting the video, she gets a text from Ellen saying, meet me at 8 a.m. And she doesn't stop then. She just looks down at her phone, reads the text while the video is playing.
Yep.
Yep.
I do not approve.
And when Lars is on the screen, she has to double check with the photo.
Yep.
Yeah, it's very good. She's a real detective, and Hélène's message is in all caps.
Yeah. Back in the past, Carolyn is meeting Konstantin, by a lake. They exchange pleasantries. They are dating, I suppose.
Exchange pleasantries, but like in such a funny way. Constantine is hilarious, in my opinion.
Yeah, and so sweet.
Yeah, he says, I brought sandwiches made from strange animal parts. That is what British people like, no? And then she's like, that and discussing the traffic. So he laughs his laugh.
Yeah.
That makes me so happy. And then he's all clever and says, sorry, I'm late. The traffic was a nightmare.
Constantine.
Anyway, Caroline confronts her lover boy. He did not enjoy saying that.
You chose the second.
Look, if that's what my favorite song by Queen is called, I should be able to say the word. Anyway, Caroline confronts him and asks, are you sure you're German? And he is being very sleek and says, I am whatever you want me to be.
Such a stupid answer. Again, we have this example of people not being able to lie when as the audience know something.
Yeah, I thought of that too when he said that.
Yep.
Then Caroline starts talking in, well, I think Constantine says it best. What language is that? Literally, when she started talking, I thought she was speaking German because I did not understand it. And then when he asked, what language is that? I thought this was him showing accidentally that he doesn't speak German. And then with the next thing that she said, I figured out, oh, this was supposed to be Russian. And then I went back a couple of times to figure out what she said. And like, no Russian corner this week, so that's why I'm saying it now. But like I said before, a couple of times when Caroline has been speaking Russian, I don't have a problem with her Russian. I think it makes complete sense for who she is. But it was still funny. Also, did you know that flirting in Russian apparently is flirtovat? I thought you would enjoy that. That's what I learned.
Horrible.
So yeah, then they point guns at each other.
They sure do. And then we learn a lot of stuff that I guess we assumed we knew already. Anyway, Konstantin is working for the KGB. He is Russian indeed. And he blackmailed her dad, and now her dad is dead.
He slept with her to get to her dad. I think that's important.
Yeah.
I think he also did like her.
Yeah, of course.
But she might now think he didn't. So, yeah.
Then she says that she wants to offer him a deal. Mm-hmm. And we just never find out what that is because someone ruins everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Johan comes in and ruins their moment by being weirdly jealous of this situation where his girlfriend is pointing a gun at a guy.
Yeah. I was also thinking about that. Like, he says that he knew something was going on between them, and I was just like, from what?
They are standing 6 feet apart and she's pointing a gun at him.
I mean, I guess that he must have been listening in earlier.
Oh, I guess, yeah.
I think it's hilarious.
Oh, yeah. It is. And also, this is where we all realize that they were not in open relationships.
Yeah. That was very disappointing.
Very silly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so then they fight.
Mm-hmm.
And Johan gets oared into the water.
Yep.
And then he gets oared some more. So I guess Johan / Lars presumably gets murdered here.
You mean this was his accident in a boat?
Yeah. I don't know if like, we don't learn if it's the KGB or the MI6 who framed this murder as an accident.
But I think the 12 did that. I think at this point, Constantine and Caroline I know that the 12 just appeared, but I think like him as the 12, as the representative of the 12, he did that, and then the 12 started from there without Constantine and Carolyn.
Yeah, I agree.
What?
Even though Carolyn named the 12, she was never actually in the 12. Because she probably left Germany after this incident, I assume. And Constantine also possibly went back to Russia. So I think that Lars is the one who actually then started whatever the 12 is doing now and just used that name. And he, with this group of people, he faked his deaths to do whatever.
But yeah, this makes sense to me. Like, I find this interesting from the perspective of Carolyn, how it must have been for her to find out about the 12 and what she thought of it, knowing this. And also for Constantine to then start working for them. I don't know. I love this backstory, okay? It's so silly and it makes me happy.
Well, I guess we'll see if I'm right at all soon. Not in this episode.
That's how I interpreted it as well. So, you know, it has to be right.
Sure.
Well, no one in the show has magically interpreted it yet. So we don't know if it's true yet.
Eve, where are you?
Yeah. So in the same place, but at a different time, Carolyn is standing on this pier calling Constantine on the phone. And she mainly wants to know where a cabin that Carolina's family has would be. But then her and Constantine also have a weird chat about what their lives would have been if the thing with the oars wouldn't have happened. Which is very vague, but how I interpret it is as if because we almost killed this guy, the 12 happened.
Yeah.
That's probably true.
Yeah.
But it's also still kind of silly that Carolyn's like, do you think we would have nice, normal lives if I was just working for MI6 and you were working for KGB?
It's true.
This was mostly a conversation that we saw through Carolyn's perspective. Then we move more to Constantine's perspective, where Pam comes to show him her outfit. And she seems happy, and he acknowledges that when he says, I think you like it. And then we hear another voice.
It's Villanelle.
Yes. Who says, I think it's been done.
Rude.
Rude indeed. And it's actually 8 a.m. Like, right now, supposedly.
Yeah.
Because Eve comes to Hélène, who is standing by a car. And Hélène asks, aren't you scared I'm going to kill you? And Eve says, isn't that the point? And that makes Hélène talk about how pathetic she used to think Eve is.
Yep.
Which felt so childish.
Yeah, she was like, you must have just been like obsessed with Villanelle and then me. And Eve is like, don't compare yourself to Villanelle. But then Hélène saw that Eve is actually like them, just shitty.
I love how you paraphrase it, Nea.
Yeah.
She literally said shitty pigeon wings.
Poopy?
Poopy. Yeah.
Where's Martin when you need him?
Yep.
So then Hélène says she's going to find Lars, that she knows where Lars is. And if Eve wants to come along... Which Eve does?
Yeah.
What? Don't you know what you did to this woman, Eve? Wild.
Yeah, quite silly.
I mean, as we have learned, Eve doesn't really care if she dies. So she's like, well, if she kills me, I'm gonna die. It's whatever. But she doesn't think of the real danger.
Yeah. She got so used to doing ill-advised things without consequences that... Now she just does that.
Mm-hmm.
Then we cut to Villanelle and Constantine in a hotel room.
Mm-hmm.
And I just gotta say, there are lots of hotel scenes in this season. I guess when they were like, well, we can't travel, so hotels it is.
Yep, they definitely
said that. Have either
of
you ever been to a hotel?
Yeah.
Well, not that many, but yeah.
Opinions.
I dislike them. They make me sad. But I do like the breakfast. The hotel breakfast. Truly, everything is worth it for the hotel breakfast.
I wish I could enjoy a hotel breakfast. Usually there's nothing for me to eat.
Yeah.
Yeah, I also don't love hotels. I dislike them less than I used to, and I don't mind a hotel that has, a water park or a spa or something. That seems okay to me.
I like hotels, but not enough to pay for them.
Valid.
Okay, so we are in this hotel, and Villanelle and Constantine are having a nice little talk.
About how things were always bad for both of them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Villanelle jokes by saying, you want to hug it out? Joke. It's gonna happen later.
Yeah. They do both really want to hug it out.
Yeah.
But what Villanelle also really wants to do is to find and kill Hélène. It was also funny how she was like, so Hélène... And he was like, how about me and how I'm doing? And she was like, how are you doing? And he was like, well, so Hélène.
But also she doesn't ask, how are you doing? She does it in a mocking voice.
Absolutely.
So that changes it quite a bit.
Yep.
So Villanelle came to meet Constantine because she wants to kill Hélène and then the rest of them.
Yeah, as she says, I tried killing other people's assholes, but charity begins at home.
Wow, yes. Amazing.
So, the parallel here is that Hélène is Villanelle's Camilo?
Yes.
How exactly?
Because she is hurting Villanelle, like, not by burning her, but by fucking Eve.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
I guess they didn't fuck, but still.
Okay.
Then Constantine says some stuff to Villanelle, which he's trying to, I don't know, do a nice thing by telling Villanelle that he's basically being better with Pam than he was with her. Great. Love it.
Yes, why? Villanelle is... quite upset that Constantine never saw the potential in her to be anything other than the assassin, the low-life assassin for the 12. And Constantine says that, oh no, he did see the potential, but then says that actually he does regret how he treated Villanelle. So that is an emotional moment that they have.
Constantine says that he won't tell Villanelle where Hélène is, first, because he doesn't know, but also because he doesn't believe that she can actually get free of the 12. But he can give her a contact of a previous assassin that he trained for some reason.
Because it's fun, because it's the last season. Of course we want to know someone else that he trained before Villanelle.
Yep.
Come on, now.
True. He says that this previous assassin might be able to help Villanelle, and I'm not sure what he meant. Like, help with what? Like, help find Hélène, or help kill Hélène, or help kill all the 12? Like, is he saying this previous assassin also hates the 12, or just that she's good at things? I don't know.
All of the above.
Yeah. Plus, he also thinks that Villanelle will like her. And I hope so too, and I can't wait to see it.
Indeed.
Yep.
And then he gives her the little note with the info about the assassin. And they do the thing with their hands where they're like kind of fighting for the note. And then they are just like grabbing each other and... then they hug.
They hug, and it's so nice.
Ugh. God.
And Constantine kind of like cries a little.
Yeah, and it's like a long hug, and it's so warm, and it feels good.
And sad.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. Yeah.
And there's some Russian music playing that I think we've heard on this show before.
Mm.
And it's nice. Mm. Good moment.
Yes. Back in Berlin, Carolyn gets to the cabin. And there, of course, we meet again Johann, or Lars. Carolyn says sorry for the ore, an apology that Johann does not accept, understandably.
This is my favorite exchange. Apology is not accepted. Completely understand. May I come in?
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
Carolyn always knows that her apologies will not be accepted, and she is okay with that.
Yeah.
So when Carolyn tries to get in, Johann shows her that he is holding a gun. But Carolyn is not upset by this, and she says, while walking into the cabin, "If you shoot me, you won't get to hear all the clever things I have to say. Think about that."
Yeah.
Love her.
So who wants to do the last scene?
So then we go to Eve and Ellen in the car, and the car has now stopped. And they are supposedly waiting for Lars. And Ellen says to just keep watching the door. And I just want to say that when they are waiting and looking at the door, I really thought that Constantine would walk out. Mm-hmm. And that it would be revealed that Constantine is Lars. Because Johann is Johann. Look, I know that it could be that I am wrong. I'm just telling you my experience of the beginning of this scene.
How serious are you?
Like a good 60%.
Okay.
Anyway, it's not Constantine that comes out, it's Villanelle. And
she has a note.
She has a note, and it says, "Her name is Gunn, Fisgar Island."
Good name.
And Ellen makes the driver lock the door, and she says, "Did you really think I wouldn't get back at you?" And honestly, yeah, Eve, seriously? Didn't you?
Yeah, Eve did not think this through.
And Eve panics, and this is another scene from the trailer, right?
Yes, and I must say that when we saw that scene in the trailer, I think I even commented in our episode that this looks like Eve is looking at Villanelle.
Wow.
Because I thought it looked like Eve, you know. Yeah. Oh, I said I thought it looked like one of those times where they almost meet but don't meet.
Oh my god.
Wow. And I was right.
Oh my god. Wow. That's incredible.
Thank you. It's just I didn't know it would look like this.
Yeah. Yeah. Eve panics and yells for Villanelle. And Villanelle is just there standing, looking at a little Jesus statue.
Actually looking at herself in the mirror that's behind the Jesus statue.
I just thought there was also a mirror.
It's symbolism. Mm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But yeah, because in that mirror, we see her get shot with an arrow.
Very dramatic.
What a fucking arrow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
She falls down. And is this just something that happens when you get shot with an arrow? Was it like a poison arrow? I don't know. Doesn't seem like you would just like instantly die or fall unconscious if you get shot with an arrow in your shoulder.
I thought it was poisoned.
It doesn't matter. What matters is that Eve is truly losing her mind over this naturally. And she attacks Ellen. Tries to strangle her to get her to unlock the door, which is in fact successful.
Mm-hmm.
even though maybe the strangling didn't really have that much to do with it. It's just Ellen's games.
Yeah, enough time passed for yes. Ellen to be like, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And Eve then runs to Villanelle while screaming, oh God, oh no, oh no, which to me was the most romantic thing that mm-hmm. happened in this season so far.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I feel that. I think I agree, yeah.
And then she kind of tries to cradle Villanelle, like, I don't know.
I don't know, but it's great. She holds Villanelle in her arms.
Yeah, she's doing a pietà.
Yes.
Yes. So she's holding Villanelle in her arms. She's also not trying to get an ambulance.
Mm-hmm.
Or
any kind of help.
Any kind of help. But anyway, here on Eve and Villanelle in an embrace, we end the episode.
Well, no. We go up with a drone and look onto the sea.
Yep, we do that.
And that's how we end, which I feel like was the first time a drone for filming came in handy.
Mm-hmm,
totally. I always feel like this is so not needed. You're just doing this to show off that you have a drone. Mm-hmm. But here I thought it was really beautiful and at the correct time to use it.
Mm. And that's the episode.
Cool. Cool, cool. Let's go to Uti.
Yes.
Yes.
Do it.
In this episode, Villanelle wears three outfits. The first one she wears while eating breakfast that Benita made. And it is a green, white, and blue short-sleeved shirt with an abstract pattern that really reminded me of Ankara or Ankara fabric.
Hmm. What is that?
It's the fabric that's used mostly in Africa, but it's like super like colorful and with like
mm-hmm.
abstract patterns and stuff. But mm-hmm, the fabric mm-hmm. itself is actually cotton, like it's an actual fabric, not just the pattern. So it's not that. It's just reminded me of that because mm-hmm. this shirt is made of rayon, I assume. And with that, she's wearing some green pants that we barely see. So it's mostly the shirt.
Is it a button-up?
Yeah, it's a button-up. The second outfit I named probably incorrectly Slavic Goddess of Death. Because she is wearing a... So this is the outfit she wears when she murders the firefighter guy. And it's a white dress or almost a tunic with a lot of embroidered flowers. Which, when I see this, I think Eastern Europe, but actually they also have very similar style in Scandinavia. So maybe it's like a Scandinavian style? No?
No, she's Russian. Eastern Europe, come on.
Of course. Well, anyway, underneath this, she is wearing green pants with a side stripe in white and red. And they are actually harem pants, again. And she is also wearing very simple red sneakers.
When did you see all that?
When she's lying on the floor, mostly.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
The third outfit is the orange ensemble. Wherein she is wearing a orange kind of shirt coat. Is what I called it. So it's actually patterned in a very similar way that Pam's outfit was patterned. So it's this kind of very wide A shape, like a bell, except it's a very different fabric. So this fabric is orange with butterfly pattern and some flowers or something like this. And then she's also wearing white pants made from the same fabric. And I don't know what this fabric is. It could be silk. It could be rayon. It could just be some weird vinyl. It's very hard to tell what it is. But I assume it's silk. With this, she is also wearing the sandals that you wear with socks. I don't know how else to explain those sandals. The hiking sandals, all right, and the back of the upper piece of the outfit is actually in black, not in this worn fabric.
Can't believe you almost forgot to say that.
We didn't. It was just written after the sandals.
Okay.
And her hair here is in a bun. So, which is your favorite outfit?
My favorite outfit was the first one. I saw it and immediately fell in love. I dream about it. I just think it was gorgeous. And yeah, none of the others compare, in my opinion.
Mm. Did you see it and you were like, nay, I would love this.
No, I was like, I love this. I can see you loving it, though, but I always put myself first.
Charity begins at home.
Yeah, exactly.
I saw it and I was like, Naya loves this. And that's also my favorite outfit.
Tamara?
My favorite outfit was the orange one. Just because I'm just so happy that we're back with very loud, very villainelly outfits. Or at least this one was like that. Yeah. And it just made me happy to see it. My rating for today's episode is controversial. I'm joking. It's not controversial, but it is silly. I read this episode, The Lord of the Rings, all three movies, which I know that isn't a queer media. However, certain themes and how prevalent quoting of Lord of the Rings is among my gay friends. I will allow
just
this.
Just the through-the-roof homoeroticism of male friendship.
Yes, exactly.
I wanted to mention that. Do you know that in the OC, at one point, I don't remember the names of the characters. Anyway, one of the girls says something along the lines of, hey, remember that movie that the guys made us watch about those gay...
I know which quote it is.
Okay, about those gay guys that
on
are...
On a mountain.
Like, on a mountain, and her friend is like, Brokeback Mountain? She's like, no, Lord of the Rings.
Yep.
So that's why I felt like your rating was appropriate.
Thank you.
That's why.
Yeah.
The OC confirmed it.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
I am rating this episode Princess Switch 3 Romancing the Star, the Netflix movie. I mean, there's no explicit confirmation that anyone in that movie is queer, but there are some characters that are so very queer-coded that I cannot believe anyone would think otherwise.
Yeah.
And I chose that rating because the vibe I was going for was it's so bad, it's good. They are it's so bad, it's good in quite different ways. For example, I think this episode of Killing Eve kind of takes itself seriously when it comes to the silly, silly anarchist stuff. But I just found it so silly, it was delightful. While The Princess Switch is just an all-around delightful nonsense. And I would definitely recommend it.
We're all rating things very heterosexually today.
Hey.
I am rating it the most heterosexual show of all time, Charmed.
Oh my god.
But my excuse is that the reboot is very gay. But I am rating it the old Charmed. And it is because of multiple things. One is that I love it so much, but it's very silly.
Mm.
Not but it's silly. It's very silly and I love it so much. That's what I meant. And specifically what made me think of it was the whole Cupid lecture, because in the show Charmed, Phoebe, my favorite, ends up with Cupid. Mm. And also she is constant, like there are multiple episodes where everyone's just like, ah yes, Phoebe, the one that loves. And to the point where at one point she is turned into Aphrodite. So yeah, that connection made it so that I had to choose this. But also, they do go into the past a few times on that show, and this is what this show does, and it's just, I love that. I really, this is one of my favorite things in media, so that's my rating.
Nice.
Nice.
I just remember the time when I thought that Charmed was a show about witches being witches, and then I found out it's about witches being heterosexual, and yep. I was so disappointed.
I also found this out when I attempted to rewatch Charmed as an adult.
Yeah, yeah.
And I managed to watch like an episode and a half, and I just couldn't do it. It was horrifying.
I remember you saying that, and that made me want to rewatch it. And oh, I did, and I powered through the whole thing, I loved almost every second of it. It's just such a nostalgic thing for me, but also it's great.
It's time for a game. We were thinking of just doing a good old fuck, marry, kill, but then we were having some troubles deciding on the three characters, so we decided instead we would do fuck or podcast with. And we have to choose between Carolyn and Carolina.
This is actually hard.
This is actually hard.
Surprisingly hard.
I mean, I think mostly because we know so much about Carolyn and so little about Carolina.
Yeah.
For me, it's mostly because I wouldn't want to podcast with either of them.
Yeah. I would fuck Carolina and podcast with Carolyn. Just because Carolina seems like a kind of possibly a boring person. And I think even though Carolyn would annoy me so much, that's still better than being bored while you're podcasting.
See, I'm doing it the other way around. Mm-hmm. I would fuck Carolyn and podcast with Carolina because I feel like Carolina would be boring.
And you wouldn't want to fuck a boring person?
Yes.
Or you would want to do a podcast with a boring person?
The first one, but I don't mind. Like, yes, the first one. And I wouldn't want to do a podcast with Carolyn because she is so obnoxious and condescending that it would, like, especially the young version of her, since that's what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
I just couldn't take it. While with Carolina, I think I could just, like, be funny, and she would just be like the straight man to my jokes, and it could work somehow.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking along similar lines than both of you. I think Carolyn is so much more interesting, like, she would have interesting things to talk about, and would be good for podcasting in that way, but she is unbearable as a person.
Yep.
But I still think I would podcast with her because I think I would rather podcast with an unbearable person than someone that I wouldn't know how to talk to.
Mm.
And obviously I'm basing my entire answer on who I would podcast with, and then just whoever's left, the person I will fuck.
Yep.
When you eliminate the podcast with, whatever remains, however improbable, must be fucked.
Yeah, that's the universe that I created with that binary.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Wow, it's predictions time.
Yes. Let's start this predictions corner with a question.
Ooh.
Do you think Villanelle died?
no, I cannot believe that they would kill her 3 full episodes before the end. I'm not saying it's impossible. It definitely looked like she's dead. However, I just cannot believe that anyone would write it like that. And I'm not gonna believe it until I see it with my own 2 eyes.
Okay. I think she is dead, but...
She will rise in 3 days.
Yeah. Well, not necessarily 3 days, but like, definitely, I think she was shot by a poison arrow, which makes it seem like she is dead.
Mm-hmm. Oh, like a Romeo and Juliet?
Yes, I was combining Romeo and Juliet and also Jesus. And like the resurrecting god of the resurrecting thing of Adonis.
Mm-hmm.
So I was combining all of those things. But then that makes me question, is Eve gonna kill herself then?
Maybe.
Anyway, this is like the whole of my predictions. I was so proud of myself for finally having actual predictions and not just wishes. And now it's just gonna be all in this one question and then I have nothing left.
God, I love your prediction, Nina.
Thank you. I do too.
Yeah, I think, you know, what you said is the correct way of it happening. I don't know. I think because it's kind of ambiguous, it's very unlikely that Villanelle is just dead. I think it's unlikely for shows to make a person dead when they leave it ambiguous at first. And also because we have 3 episodes to go, but mm-hmm. I would enjoy like a Jesus thingy. But yeah, I don't think Villanelle is dead.
Oof, okay.
Other predictions or wishes?
I cannot concentrate on anything else. This is all that I think about.
Yeah, it's really interesting because I feel like with my experience of watching this episode is hardly, like, there is hardly any attention towards the ending because I just feel so strongly about the whole episode. Like, I am just screaming throughout the whole episode because I'm so into the whole flashback, silly anarchists are actually the 12 thing. I love it so much. Oh my god, I'm just like vibrating thinking about this episode. Love it so much. Best thing that has happened to the show in a season and 1 episode. So I hardly even think about the last scene. But when it comes to my predictions, then it's just all about that last scene. Because that is the future. Then again, I do hope that we just get more of this. The 12 are these anarchists. I want to find out more about, like, all the specific characters. And I am interested in this finally now. Come on.
Yeah, my prediction is that we will find out how Johan, after coming back from the dead, then constructed this original version of the 12, or like what his plan was.
Exactly, and I have literally never cared about this before.
Uh-huh.
But now I'm like, give it to me, baby.
Yeah, I was gonna say, this episode proves again that they're really outdoing themselves on the plot.
Mm-hmm.
As much as the show can.
Yeah.
I do have a wish that's not connected, and it's that Pam goes on a date with Derek. I don't usually wish for heterosexuality, but I just want Pam to be happy, and I really like Derek. So that would be nice.
Yeah, I agree. How he worships her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they are cute.
And I want more scenes of Constantine being impressed by Pam and laughing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I do hope that before the season is over that we do get to have him walk to fun music.
Again, yeah.
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 Yeah. And I hope that we meet this new old assassin and that she's fun and that she does get along with Villanelle and it's great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Let's see.
While you're thinking, I just want to say this is not a prediction or wish or anything. I'm just really happy that the last three episodes have been so enjoyable. I was kind of worried at the beginning of this season, but I have really been enjoying the last three episodes.
Yeah. I'll say my final prediction is that this season will stay enjoyable till the end.
Thank you, dear listener, for listening to this episode of Queering Eve. We will record another one. We release new episodes when we can. Have a nice week, and remember, we are like Kafka, but better. And I'm not gonna mention my burn, even though I definitely had the thought when Benita was showing hers.
And no, you did not mention.
Yep. I did so well restraining myself.